You're listening to Wheelationships.
But we've been talking about fences and boundaries in our lives. We've talked about all the boundaries. We've talked about the laws that govern those boundaries. And now we're talking about the myths that we sometimes believe in with these boundaries and some common myths that we tend to put in our thinking. And if you don't realize they're myths and they become part of your thinking, they can make establishing boundaries very difficult in your life. So we're going to do a little bit of myth busting, but we're going to backtrack a little bit because we've been off a week, and I know as I started to prepare this week, I had a hard time remembering some of the myths that he covered. We're not going to cover them in depth by any means, but I do want to touch on the previous four myths that we have covered already in here so we can kind of mentally catch up to where we've been. Now, myth number one, and I think I put the reviews there on your sheet. Myth number one said, if I set fences, I'm being selfish. Personally, this was a really good myth buster for me because I have a personality that would tend to feel like I'm being selfish if I set a boundary or say no to someone. It's difficult for me in that area. And the key myth buster here was we defined the differences between selfishness and stewardship. And what you need to remember is that your very life is a gift from God. And every aspect of your life is a gift from God. He's given you your talents, your time, your money, your gifts, your abilities, your choices, your attitudes, all of those things that we have defined as being within your area of responsibility to manage and to steward. Those are your responsibility to steward. And He's called you to be a good steward with those things. When you are a good steward, you're not leaving that gate open for your time to fly out and waste in other places so that when you are required to minister or to give or to do, you have that time to give and to do. So you do need to have wise, godly boundaries and fences in your life so that you are being a good steward. Is it possible to be selfish? Absolutely. We have a sin nature that is going to cause us to be selfish. But does setting fences make us selfish? No, it does not. Be a good steward with those things that God has given you. And when you establish fences in godly places, you're being a good steward. Okay, that was myth number one. So myth number two, and I have asked him, because he covered 2 through 4 here, so I've asked him to kindly jump in whenever you feel like the need to add to what I'm my two cents here. But myth number two said, fences are a sign of disobedience. That's a myth we sometimes believe, when actuality, the opposite is true. If I don't establish fences, I'm being disobedient. A shaky fence can cause you to be compliant. And when you're compliant, you're saying yes to things when you really should be saying no. And Tim gave the biblical example of the father and the two sons in Scripture, where the sons were told to do something. One said, yes, I'll do it, never did it. The other son said, no, I'm not going to do it, but ended up doing it. Which one was the obedient one? The one who actually did what the father required him to do. And he explained to us that an internal no will nullify an external yes. And by that we mean, when I say, yes, I'm going to do something, I'll be compliant, I'll do what it is what I'm supposed to do, but internally all the while I'm resentful, I'm grumpy, I'm grousy about it. God cares a whole lot more about what He sees in your heart and the motive for why you're doing what you're doing than you actually complying and doing something. So it's very important to have those good fences. They clarify our motives so that you're not continuing to say yes to things that you need to be setting a limit and saying, no, this needs to stop. This is where my boundary is. This is where my limit is. And it keeps you from feeling guilty about saying no when you need to be able to say no. You'll flag me down, right? Okay, myth number three. If I build fences, I will be hurt by others. When we set limits, it's all about telling the truth. And it's kind of what we had just talked about, where you are not doing things that you don't have any business doing, or catering or enabling to people when you shouldn't be catering and enabling them. It's all about what you value, what you desire, and making sure that those things in your life are protected and keeping your relationships healthy. When those boundary lines aren't there where they need to be, your relationships aren't going to be healthy. These fences are, as he explained, a litmus test to our relationships. They test the quality. And when your no is rooted in love, as it should be, the people that you are in relationship with should respect your no just as much as they respect your yes. And if you have friendships or relationships where they will only keep that doorway of friendship open as long as they're in control or you're complying to what they want, if their yeses become your yeses, then their no's become your no's, that is not a healthy relationship. So these fences and these boundaries are a good test to how healthy a relationship is in your life. They should love our no as much as they love our yes. You should not have to be like them in order for there to be a healthy relationship there. It's great that we have our differences. So that's an important thing to remember. So myth number five.
No.
Oh, four?
You skipped.
Oh, I did. So sorry.
Well, let me say on that.
Okay.
Just a reminder that the truth of that, because we've shared what the truth of the myth is, and the truth of the myth is, if I build fences, I will be hurt by others. That's the truth. Because the real myth is that we're going to be harmed by others, not that we're going to be hurt. We get afraid that we're going to somehow, you know, and I had an experience this week where I was discussing something, a decision that was being made, and I in clarifying, so you're saying this is, I said to the other person, so what you're saying is this, and they felt under attack. They felt like, you know, I was being, and I was simply trying to clarify what the fences were. And so they lashed back. Okay, that's fine. You know, when you set fences and you say, this is a no here, this is a yes, it's not going to be universally well received. And you might get hurt. I might get hurt. Well, that's fine. That's, you know, that's part of it.
Did they hurt you?
Yeah. I mean, and that's part of it. You have to recognize, you can't just say, you know, when somebody attacks, I mean, part of our fence building is saying, no, you can't go beyond this line. I can't, you know, I will not do this for you. It is not my responsibility. And people aren't always happy with that. And you have to recognize and admit to the fact that when they attack, yeah, that doesn't feel good. Did I get harmed? No. You know, it didn't feel good, but I'm not any worse off, really, because they, you know, I know in time they'll understand what that fence is and what that's about, and even if they don't, that's okay. It's not my responsibility to manage their feelings. It's not my responsibility. You go back, their feelings are not my responsibility. My responsibility is what I have control over. My responsibility is this. And so when I have to, they may attack, they may get angry, that may hurt, and I have to recognize, I have to accept that, okay? Because my feelings are my responsibility. And then I have to say, okay, what am I going to do with my feelings out of it? Am I going to, because I get hurt, am I going to lash back at them? No. Because they're my responsibility. I can take control of my feelings.
And that's where we get in trouble with these with relationships and boundaries, we want so badly to be able to change somebody else's perception of us or be able to control their feelings that they have towards us. And that's not your responsibility. They're responsible and accountable for what's in their boundary lines, and we're responsible and accountable for what's in ours. So myth number four, which I'm touching on, which he kind of jumped ahead on me just a little bit, is this whole hurt versus harm. If I build fences, I will hurt others. And as he said, there's a difference between hurting and harming. When I discipline my children, it might hurt them. When they were younger, there might have been some physical pain. Now that they're teens, there is some freedom pain that they feel when they are disciplined. That does not harm them, though. And there's a big difference between hurt and harm, as he's so well explained there. We need to recognize and remember that the fences and boundaries that we have in our life are not offensive weapons, but they're defensive tools. And that's a big difference. We're not using them to harm, we're using them to protect. And it's to protect the treasures and the things that God has given us responsibility for to steward in our lives. And when they're in wise and godly places, we're going to have healthy relationships, we're going to be able to manage those things, and be able to be accountable to God in a way that honors Him and that brings a good thing into our life. So it's not an offensive weapon, they're defensive tools. So remember, it's not the difference between hurting and harming there. And then where he ended was in myth number five. I'm going to spend some more time on this myth because it covers an emotion, an aspect that we all have to deal with in our life in one way or the other. We only tend to look at it from a negative standpoint. But I'm telling you, if you happen to have struggle in this area at all, it's a big issue and it's hard to know what to do with, and that is the subject of anger. Myth number five said, fences mean that I am angry. And he brought up some good points when he introduced this myth to us. And the first kind of a myth buster I want to throw in here is rehashing something he said. Our emotions and our feelings, they are all gifts from God, all of them. Happiness, joy, sorrow, fear, anger. Those are gifts that God equipped us with to make us the fascinating creatures that we are. We are created in His image. Those are good things that He puts in our lives. But those emotions serve a function. They have a purpose. And that purpose is that they are to be signals to us. Signals such as fear. When we have fear, that is a signal that I am in danger. Back off, move away, whatever the response is, danger. That is a signal that we are to heed. When I have sadness, that's a signal that I've suffered a loss. It could be the loss of a relationship. It could be the loss of a dream that I hoped to have and don't have. It could be the loss of something that I wanted and I'm not going to get. But that brings sadness. It's a signal. Anger is another signal. We usually have that signal of anger when we feel threatened, when we feel confronted. It's a defense mechanism that triggers, I'm threatened, I'm troubled in some way. Anger tells us that our fences have been violated. It's much like our nation's radar defense system. Angry feelings serve as an early warning system. They tell us that we're in danger of being ignored or controlled. That's usually the things that trigger our anger. But the problem with anger is that when we are confronted with that signal, instead of being spirit controlled, we tend to let anger have control. And before we know it, we have lost control. And that's where the problem comes in with anger. Anger is not the problem. It is not a sin to get angry. God got angry. Grab your concordance and do a search on anger, and you're going to find a lot of those verses have to do with God being angry. But the difference is, when God was angry, it was for a purpose. It was to warn, to discipline, to rebuke. It was always used as a tool for good, and it had a purpose. He never said, "Don't get angry." He wouldn't give you a gift and then say, "Don't ever use it." He never said, "Don't get angry." What he did say was, "In your anger, don't sin." And I really like how the New Living Translation puts it, and that's the version I put on your notes there. Don't sin by letting anger gain control over you. When anger comes, recognize it as the signal that it is and handle it properly. We only tend to view anger as such a negative, and it's a signal. Recognize it and handle it as the signal that it is. I once heard Tony Dungy talking on a radio program about his young son that he adopted. And that little boy, excuse me, has a disease called congenital insensitivity to pain with anhidrosis, or CIPA for short. And basically what this is you're born, it's a disease you're born with, it's congenital, and the nerve cells that are responsible for transmitting the signals to your brain that communicate, I'm in pain, this is intense heat, this is intense cold, those things are missing. So those signals that would normally keep somebody from keep them from harming themselves are gone. And he said, you know, don't touch, those kind of signals are missing. So he said they have to really keep a close eye on them. For example, if the mama's baking cookies in the oven, what little boy doesn't want cookies? Well, if cookies are good, they're going to be even better hot right out of the oven. And he will literally try to reach in that 350 degree oven to grab the cookie sheet to get some cookies. But the problem is his signals aren't working. He can grab it and touch it and not feel pain, but yet he will suffer the very real physical consequences of ignoring a signal that should be heeded, and he can get hurt very badly. Our emotions are signals. They help us, and without them, we can be harmed. Using the signal of anger helps us to establish fences. However, with all emotions, anger doesn't understand time. A lot of times that anger doesn't matter whether it was 20 minutes ago or 20 years ago. It has to be worked through appropriately. Otherwise, what will happen is that anger will come in and it will just stay in your heart and it'll become stagnant there. We had a dishwasher go out in December 17th to be precise, and we did not replace it until March. Now, we have a large family, and initially that was a really sore spot with me, but after a while, and I really couldn't tell you why we didn't replace it. It's one of those things, you know, we looked and then it got sidetracked, and you don't really know why you haven't done it, but it's not been done kind of thing. And after a while, we discovered that we got kind of used to not having the dishwasher, because everybody would come in and take care of their own dishes and wash and dry and put up after the meal, and they were just sort of responsible for themselves. And my daughter Summer, who has to empty the dishwasher, loved not having a dishwasher because she didn't have to do that chore anymore, and she was real happy about it. But we went from December to a March without a dishwasher. But we forgot one little thing. Our dishwasher died mid-cycle, so there was water that stood standing at the bottom of the dishwasher that we forgot about. So we went and opened that thing, and it stunk. And that's what anger is like. The water wasn't bad. It wasn't the waters that made everything stink. It was because it wasn't used properly. The water should have come in, done its purpose, and gone out. But it didn't. It stayed there. And anger is much the same way. Anger is not bad. But when we don't let it come in and serve its purpose and go out, that's when it becomes a stench in our life and in our heart, and it affects the relationships that we have around us. It has a purpose. And a lot of times when individuals who have not had boundaries where they should have, maybe they've been in a controlling relationship or a manipulative relationship or just an unhealthy situation, and all of a sudden they decide, I am going to put a boundary here, I am going to put a limit, usually that's quickly followed by some intense anger, because they're recognizing things that wasn't there before. They're setting limits, but that's not a new anger. What that is an old anger that's been sitting there simmering and getting stingy in their life over past no's that they never had the courage to voice, or past no's that they voiced and was not respected by the people around them. And they weren't heeded. So it's very common for boundary injury people to do some catching up with the anger. They may have a season where they're looking back and recognizing, okay, this isn't the first time they've done this. They did this here and here and here. They may recognize some past violations that they didn't really recognize before, but they're going to have to work through that and take responsibility for that anger and develop healthy fences out of that. And the truth is that fences will decrease your anger. When you have godly, mature boundary lines in your life, it is going to decrease your anger. Now, if you think about it, all the immature has to set a boundary line is anger. When you have an infant, a newborn, or a toddler, a small child, they're immature. All they know to do is to get angry when they have a need that's not being met, when there's something that they want. But guess what? They mature. They grow up. And anger should not be your boundary line. That should just be a signal that a boundary is needed. They grow up and it no longer becomes the only tool that they use. Remember, anger is your early warning signal, early warning system. That's what its function is. And as Tim mentioned earlier, when those boundary lines become consistent, there may be anger, there may be hurt, but as they are consistent in your life, people that you're in relationship with will cease to be angry because they're going to know you're not going to permit that. And you will cease getting angry because you're confident in where that is, and folks all around are going to get used to where that boundary is, and the anger will decrease. Now, what I don't want you leaving here thinking is that if I am angry, then you violated my fence line, and therefore it's your fault that I'm angry. Listen to me. It is never someone else's fault if you are angry. You are the one that God has given that emotion to. You are responsible. It's your responsibility, and you are accountable for that emotion. It is not someone else's fault if you are angry and you're struggling in this area. We so easily want to shove that responsibility on somebody else's shoulders. That's not where it belongs. You're accountable for that emotion. You are the one that is to steward properly and wisely that emotion. So, how can I tell? Good anger, bad anger, I got anger, what do I do with it? We're going to go to a quick clip with Dr. Cloud as he discusses the differences between good anger and bad anger. It's not one of those funny clips. We love funny clips, but I thought it was so good. And again, I just think anger is an area that we all kind of struggle with and don't know what to do with sometimes. So remember, it's a signal. And a signal to help us for change for good. I'm looking at the time. We've got 5 minutes. You want me to stop right here at the end of this myth? Keep going. Okay, myth number 6. When others build fences, it injures me. It injures me. Now, hopefully we've covered this enough that you know that if my fence lines and my limits, my boundaries aren't intended to injure you, then yours are not intended to injure me. But when we encounter a fence that someone else has established that says no to our request, we don't like it. Maybe you wanted to borrow money. Maybe you wanted some of their time and they weren't willing to give it. Whatever the request may be, we're told no. If you believe this myth, then when you are told no, you are going to respond in ways that are hurtful. You're going to feel that they've been hurtful to you. You're going to feel they have rejected you. You're going to feel they have been cold to you. And because you feel that way, when you hit a limit or a boundary line, you're going to have difficulty establishing healthy boundaries in your life because of your experience, the way you interpret it, the way you've put that myth into your thinking. You're not going to see limits and boundaries as a good thing. You're going to see them as a harmful thing. No one enjoys being told no. It's not pleasant, but it doesn't have to injure us. Although we may feel threatened by fences and by boundary lines, and here's some reasons why we might feel threatened. Number one is a past record of bad fences. Our past shapes so much of how we think in the present. And you might have had a friend or a parent or a spouse that did not know how to set appropriate, healthy limits, and you were hurt by them, genuinely hurt by their inability to establish healthy fences. And because of that, you might be very wary of setting limits that look similar to the ones that have hurt you. For example, if you grew up in a home that was lacking affection and affirmation, you might have a tendency to want to make up for that deficiency by overcorrecting in your own children and going too far the other extreme in that particular area because it's a source of past hurt for you. But when you do that, you've just set another unhealthy fence line. It just went in the opposite direction. It was too broad instead of too narrow. So you have to be very careful not to allow an unhealthy limit from your past to determine a boundary in your present. Another reason we might feel threatened is an idolatrous relationship. Not an adulterous one, an idolatrous one. I put a quote there on your paper from the book. Thought it was very good. It said, when a conflict with one significant person can bring us to despair, it's possible that we are putting that person in a place that only God should occupy. But we need each other. If you've read the Bible at all, you know it is very clear. We are all part of the body. We are all needed. We need one another. God uses each other to bless the body. We are needed, but only God is indispensable. And if it takes complete peace with one person in order for you to have emotional stability, if there's a person that you have really a hard time taking a no from, then they have control over you. You've given it to them. That control doesn't belong to them. Most of the time, they didn't ask for it. But because you've put them in an idolatrous place in your life, they then have control. And with a relationship like that, all the person with the control has to do is just threaten to withdraw from you. They don't even have to withdraw. They just have to threaten to withdraw from you a little bit, and you're going to comply. That's all it'll take. And before long, there's a well-established system of emotional blackmail going on. The controller continues withdrawing, and then the person who never set a healthy boundary in the relationship is going to frantically scramble like crazy to constantly keep the controller happy. Doesn't work. It's not a way to live. It's not a way to have a relationship. So it's very important for us to have several deep, significant relationships in your life so that you are not depending on one person to meet all of your need. No human should be given that responsibility. I have the greatest husband on the face of the earth. I'm here to tell you. I'll fight you on that one. But it is not his job to keep me contented and happy and socially satisfied and meeting all of those needs. That's not his responsibility. That's why God blesses in my life other friendships and relationships so that there are other places that you can get those needs met. Because when you place all of that on the shoulders of one person, they're never going to feel like they have the freedom to say no because you've got nowhere else to go to. You've got to have other relationships in your life and not place one person as an idol. We hate to call it that, but that's what they are when they have that sole responsibility to meet all your needs. And then real quickly, the third thing is an unwillingness to be responsible. We've used this phrase in here before. You make me angry. You make me sad. You make me whatever, fill in the blank. Perhaps what you need to be doing instead of saying that is taking responsibility for your emotions. Again, your emotions are those things within your boundary lines that you're the steward and you're responsible for. But some people go through life being so accustomed to others catering to their every need that they begin to believe that their well-being is somebody else's responsibility. They feel let down, they feel unloved if they aren't catered to or bailed out when they feel like they need it. They completely fail to accept responsibility. In 2 Corinthians chapter 7, Paul's writing to the Corinthians, and he refers to a letter he previously wrote them. Now, I read a couple commentaries. It's unclear whether it's a point in 1 Corinthians or a previous letter we don't know about, but that's neither here nor there. But evidently, he wrote them a really strong letter of rebuke and set down some really strong boundary lines on the Corinthians, coming against their rebelliousness and setting some limits. He established fences that limited their behavior, and this is how they responded. He tells us in chapter 7, verses 8 and 9, I am no longer sorry that I sent you that letter, though I was sorry for a time, for I know it was painful for you for a little while. Now I'm glad I sent it, not because it hurt you, but because the pain caused you to have remorse and change your ways. It was the kind of sorrow God wants his people to have, so you were not harmed by us in any way. The Corinthians took his limit, they accepted his limit, and they responded well to the boundaries that Paul set down in their life. They took responsibility and they changed. So wrapping this up, a key thing is remember the old, you learned it when you're in kindergarten probably, Jesus' golden rule, Matthew 7:12. Do for others what you would like them to do for you. Apply that to setting limits. Do you want others to respect your no and to respect your boundaries? Then you need to respect the no and the boundaries of other people. And part of that is dispelling all these myths that we bring into our thinking that makes the accepting of those no's difficult. So we got to kind of get rid of those myths and change the way we think and set limits that are healthy. All right? Yes, ma'am.
I think that it is easier as you get older, because I think you can accept people better. You have seen a lot. And I think it's when I was younger, it was very hard for me to say no or not get mad.
Right. And that's probably true to a great degree. I think there are some people, though, that no matter how far they age, until they change the way they think, they're going to continue to fall into these different traps that make that difficult. But, yeah, I think Sally's right. I mean, I'm a different parent, you know, in my 40s than I was in my 20s and 30s. And there's just things that you are relaxed about. But got to have some healthy limits and some healthy boundaries. Oh, yeah, those poor first kids. How many of you guys are firstborns? Bless your heart, you little guinea pigs. You lived through it anyway. So, all right. Well, you guys have a great week. Come back next week. Thanks for coming.